The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionix, creators of Phonebox and Oasis. Welcome to the social studio.
Thanks for connecting with the weekly podcast from Radio Today. I'm Trevor Dan, and I found a nice comfy sofa on the fifth floor of New Broadcasting House where I can have a little chat about sound women. Sue Ahern is here. Hello, Sue.
Hello.
Now, you're the Director of Training for Creative People, which is an agency that helps people, but you're a board member of Sound Women. And Sound Women's been going nearly 3 years now.
That's right. We just had our third anniversary, yeah.
Right. And I was thinking before we met, when you started, I think a lot of people thought this would be a little kind of flash in the pan pressure group. But it's become so much more than that now. And you've just announced these plans for doing training days. And I thought we ought to catch up on the organisation and how you're doing. So what's Sound Women actually for?
Well, basically, we're for promoting, helping and training women in the audio industry. We're really careful to say audio industry as well and not just radio. Because obviously there are obvious players there, but there are so many women we have discovered who are doing their own podcasts, who are sound engineers, things like that. So it's trying to be as inclusive as possible. I suppose the equivalent in television would be the women in film and television. So we are for women in the audio industry.
I mean, I can remember sitting with Maria Williams, whose idea really this was, in the old Sony Radio Committee. And her saying to me, we had a cup of coffee after one meeting, and she said, you know, you look around that table, there's only me. I'm the only woman here. Why had radio, do you think, allowed that to happen?
Well, I think it's always the people who put themselves forward will be the ones who get to speak. And, you know, maybe we've been guilty of not doing that. I don't think we were encouraged much to say that. But I think none of us are revolutionaries. When I look around the Sound Women board, you know, I think we're all very nice, very inclusive. But we were just a bit fed up. You know, we're fed up of, you know, Maria and I, when we first started doing this, we were about a couple of months in, and there was a radio event, and we said we'd go. It's one day, really interesting festival with lots of new ideas. And our ambition was to sign up every woman who was there. Let me tell you, it didn't take very long because there were eight of us. There were eight of us and there were about 200 men. So we thought, you know, first of all, why aren't these women here? Why don't they have a voice? There were two women presenting and they were very good, but we just wanted to provide more people to have a critical mass so we could just get more included.
Do you believe in what I think used to be called affirmative action? I mean, do you think that, for instance, the radio festival should say, we will always have at least one woman on every panel? Is that kind of thing going to make this work?
I want the radio festival to say, we want to have as diverse a group of speakers as possible. That's all. I don't think you have to have the token woman. But you see, for me, I think you don't have to look very far to find them. We have just been, the BBC has been very good and they've asked us to do a mentoring scheme for their local radio women. And what we've done is we've got some really top flight presenters in network who are mentoring them just on their presentation. And the way we selected them was that we said we just wanted anyone who was interested to fill out a form and also to send us an audio file of their presentation. And what we did initially was we didn't look at the information, we just listened to the audio files. We had 12 places, we've actually now filled 20. And it was a really difficult decision. And we kept saying, why aren't these women doing more mainstream programming? Because they're brilliant. Now, I think there are lots of reasons why not, you know, maybe family commitments, that sort of stuff. In local radio particularly, maybe they're not very mobile. They can't go from one radio station to another. So there's lots of infrastructure problems. But also what we're uncovering is a lack of confidence, which sounds a bit strange when you think they want to put themselves out there. But they're very good in front of a microphone, but it's going to the manager and saying, please let me do that show. That's not so good in some of their cases, not all of them by any means. And so we're really trying to boost their confidence as well, because certainly the talent is out there.
Those of us of a certain age will remember that whole thing about women listeners don't like listening to women broadcasters. Have you ever found where that came from? Because I've never been able to actually trace that.
Apparently, it was some kind of survey that was taken in the 1950s. It has now become part of myth and legend because we searched everywhere. And in fact, you know, it might be something that we'd be interested in doing a bit of research about in the future. And I do think certainly when the first woman came on, there were some complaints about that because it was new and it was different. It was like the first time there was a regional accent on Radio 4, there was hate mail, you know. that those days are gone, thank God. So I just think it's the clash of the new, the worry about the new thing, and then people just get used to it.
I can remember being at BBC Radio Nottingham myself in the 70s when Valerie Jones joined the newsroom. She was the first woman they'd ever had in there, so much so that they had to give her a man's name. She was always known as Victor in the newsroom. Can you imagine such a thing?
What was the thinking behind that?
I've no idea, but it's the same kind of thing, I guess, as Sue Foster, who was John Peel and John Walters. We would call them a BA now, but I'm sad to say she was called a secretary in those days. She was always known as Brian.
Right. Well,
that was the kind of machismo sort of atmosphere of the time, I think, in the BBC, or but, sections of it.
But also, I think, what used to happen as well is, you know, with your local radio experience, that a lot of the presenters who end up in radio did the halls. You know, they were DJs. But that's changed now. And so I think that's why there were more men to start off with, and they were local characters. But I think that's changed. And also now a lot of people are coming from news, and sometimes there are more women in news now than men. It's so inconceivable, the change that's happened just in the time that, say, we've been involved. I know we're very old, but in the time that we've been involved in radio, which is wonderful.
Now, of course, we're sitting here in the BBC. I guess BBC management needs a bit of help, doesn't it, in this department?
Yes, some more than others. I mean, we have had some fantastic support from some of the BBC, wherever we've gone. And I do think that's because we're only asking for very reasonable things. We're not tub-thumping or anything like that. You know, Radio 2, for example, generally, music and radio, asked us to do some work on flexible working, which we did. And they were very well-attended seminars, and we got some good action points out of there, which are being implemented. So I think, as always with the BBC, the heart's in the right place. Whether that always gets down to every manager is, you know, and let's face it, if you're a manager and you're really busy and you're trying to run a successful department and it's you don't think it's broke, why would you fix it? You know?
What about commercial radio then? Ashley Tabor from Global Radio was at the festival last year, and I don't think won a lot of friends by saying that usual sort of thing about, well, we don't really differentiate between the sexes. We say the best person gets the job. Mm. Do you feel that commercial radio perhaps needs to think about this more than it does at the minute?
I mean, again, they're commercial and they want to bums on seats. And what I would always posit is that actually quite a lot of women like listening to other women, you know. I think there's a commercial activity. In fact, I don't ever try to take the altruistic turn. What I always say is this is actually good for, you know, for your advertisers. Who are you trying to reach? And I'm sure he was just being very sort of businesslike, and I can totally understand that. But I just think this is a business opportunity.
So tell us about these training days that you've got coming up, Sue.
Well, we're just about to run, but unfortunately it's full up. Voice overwork is it for you. But we're also doing lots in the regions because we think that's very important. So there's a negotiation skills in Salford, there's a pitching day in Bristol, and then in November we're having a big London freelancer day, who are going to get little bite-sized chunks of different things that we're offering. So if anybody is interested, they look at the Sound Women website, they'll get all the details there.
And what else are you doing? I mean, do you do social events?
Well, yes. Most of the regional ones have little salons. The London one is very, because I live here, is monthly. And really, they're just a good drink and a chat. Men are always welcome. We don't exclude anybody. It's just a bit of solidarity, you know, passing around information, talking about podcasts, things like that.
And I was surprised when I talked to some students a few months ago that they didn't know about you. So have you reached out into the colleges and universities?
We're always trying. When we run the Sound Women Mentoring Scheme, we get a good number of students. But I think certainly we've got work to do there. I think that's fair enough.
So the next thing you've got to advertise, you're saying that's already full?
Yeah.
So we should just keep an eye open for the regional events?
Yes, and I mean, if you want to become a member of Sound Women, all the details are on the website. You actually get a heads up on anything that's coming, and also cheaper tickets.
So, Hearn, thank you very much. This is the Radio Today programme. I'm Trevor Dan, and here's Roy Martin with the news.
The Radio Today programme, with Broadcast Bionics.
Global Radio has promoted Mike Gordon to Chief Commercial Officer and Will Harding to Chief Strategy Officer. The appointments are in recognition of the contribution they've made to the company. The winners for the New York festivals are out. Congratulations to TBI Media, the Big Idea Media, for winning 16 awards, including the Grand Award. And Simon Hirst, Hirsty, has left Capital Yorkshire after over 10 years of The Daily Dose. He says it was a tough decision to make, and the time has come to make one of the hardest decisions of his life. Watch this space. That's the very latest from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Roy Martin.
Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis, offer you elegantly integrated products and intelligent one-stop shopping for all your studio needs. Discover a full range of innovative studio products. Play out by Wide Orbit, Music Master Scheduling, Stirlitz, Newsboss, Larvo, Telos, Axia, Omnia, Digigram and Commotion. Visit bionics.co.uk today.
100 years of radio.
It's 10 years this week since the Oldies Network Classic Gold hit the headlines. Their young Tony Blackburn insisted on playing Cliff records, despite being told not to.
You know, I just wanted reasons for why I couldn't play it. Nobody could give them to me, so I played them.
The story appeared to grip the nation and its rulers.
Can I say, Mr. Speaker, that the Leader of the Commons is right behind Tony Blackburn in his choice of music?
Blackburn, in defiance this week 10 years ago. His programme director, who was John Bache back then, said at the time, "I'm not angry. I love Tony. Really, he's a sweetheart." 1975 now, and this week saw the opening of another commercial station, launched by the chap who'd been turned away from his hometown station.
And a very good morning to you. It's Midsummer Day, Tuesday the 24th of June 1975, and this is Leslie Ross welcoming you to the start of our very first day of transmissions here on Radio T's 257 metres. Thanks for making the effort. Glad I did.
The early moments for Radio T's now, TFM with Leslie Ross, now Les, better known for his later days at BRMB. In those early days, commercial radio was tightly regulated, but after around a decade, exactly 30 years ago this week, the industry rebelled. The chairman of all 19 stations, and that's how many there were back then, met at London's Sheraton Hotel to make a list of 6 key demands, and they were put to the regulator, the IBA. John Whitney was its director general.
They were very outspoken, as indeed they were entitled to be, about the cost of radio as opposed alongside the cost of television. And they felt that they had been, I don't think the right word is cheated, but they felt that not sufficient time had been given to attending to the real requirements of funding for radio, and that the IBA in particular was exercising undue power to take an imbalance from radio to television. And that angered and frustrated them to a very considerable extent.
Recollections of the so-called Heathrow Conference 30 years ago this week. To the BBC now, and 46 years ago.
This is BBC Radio Leeds.
Hello, this is Ralph Robinson, your man from Auntie, with the only BBC programme money can buy. You can buy time on OPMCB simply by sending a donation to charity. So send in your requests and your offers of cash. Remember, it's your money we're after. Let's hope we get piles.
When we looked at the problem of bringing its own radio to Leeds, we thought a little buffoonery was the answer. But it's buffoonery with a ruthless purpose, survival. For instance, we have a ludicrously small budget.
The slightly rebellious BBC Radio Leeds, launching this week in 1968.
Radio 1.
21 years ago, the BBC announced a resignation. It was to be farewell to Johnny Beerling, controller of the station from 85 to 93. He'd been there at launch, too.
Of course we were quite nervous on that first day. Paul Hollingdale did the opening programme from 5.30 that went out on Radio 1 and Radio 2. And then it was the first time ever we played the original Radio 1 signature tune. This had been written. It was called Theme 1, and it was written and composed and produced by George Martin with a full orchestra. And I think that was probably one of the few times when it was played in full. I remember it was over 3 minutes. I was in the background in the studio. You wouldn't think it to look at it. You'd think Robin Scott was the only person there. But you can imagine, launching a new network, there was a lot of BBC brass about, including Robin Scott, a television crew trying to record it for posterity, me trying to keep a grip on the whole production of the show, and then Tony presenting it.
Johnny Beerling, who resigned this week in 1993. Johnny never appeared in The Archers. Chris Moyles has, and so has Princess Margaret.
Ma'am, have you a moment? There's somebody I would very much like you to meet.
Good evening, ma'am.
Your Royal Highness.
It seems to be going terribly well, doesn't it? What a lovely place this is. Have you lived here long?
Princess Margaret making a guest appearance on The Archers this week 30 years ago. She was the first royal ever to take part in a BBC drama. And across on Radio 2, a farewell this week 17 years ago to this voice.
Radio 2. With a box full of records and a bag full of post, it's Radio Soapbox and Charlie, your host.
Charlie Chester, who died aged 83 this week in 1994. He was familiar to Radio 2 listeners and the Light programme beforehand too. If one event was to be the final trigger for legislation to ban the 60s pirate ships, it was the event this week in 1966.
Oliver Smedley, a former vice president of the Liberal Party executive, was remanded at Saffron Walden in Essex, charged with the murder of Mr. Reg Calvert, head of the pirate radio station Radio City. A team of Essex detectives has gone out to Radio City, based in a disused army fort off the Kent coast, following a complaint that a boarding party had taken it over on Monday. There will be interviews from the fort in Radio Newsreel.
Good evening. Major William Oliver Smedley, MC, has been charged with the murder of Reg Calvert, the head of offshore radio station Radio City. Mr. Calvert was found shot dead in a house outside Saffron Walden, Essex, this morning.
And what has been happening recently shows, I think, that once you accept an area of illegality, you cannot control that area, and one illegality follows another. If we condone pirates, then we accept the possibility of hijackers and everything that follows from that.
Absolutely. The thin end of the wedge, obviously. Home Secretary Roy Jenkins concluding commentary there on the death of Reg Calvert this week in 1966. Super Gold was one of the AM gold services playing Beatles and the Supremes and Little Eva. It launched this week in 1990.
One solid hour of Super Gold Elvis with Willie Morgan. It's Willie Morgan, and great to be here on Supergold, your official Elvis station.
Supergold launching this week in 1990, borrowing the Chiltern and North Hants frequencies. So with Kerrang leaving its Birmingham premises this week last year.
Kerrang 105.2, hello world.
Mark Thompson becoming Director General 10 years ago. And the announcement 7 years ago that Heart, LBC and Galaxy were to be sold to Global Radio.
DJ Sammy in Galaxy, number one for dance and R&B.
Well, how good is that? Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Radio Moments.
Thank you, as always, David Lloyd. Also this week, Sue Ahern. Find out more at soundwomen.co.uk and Roy Martin. This has been the Radio Today programme, a TDC production, and we'll have more next week. Give me a shout if there are any topics or events you think we should be covering. I'm Trevor at trevordan.com. Thanks for listening.
The Radio Today programme, with broadcast by Onyx.